That's what I always say. In Morning Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are off and running on a Saturday morning. Hello, everyone. Tim Murray live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. And let me be the first to say thank you, Indianapolis Pacers. I don't know why I called you the Indianapolis Pacers when you're just the Indiana Pacers. But thank you for your win on Thursday, because that gives us an opportunity to talk more about the NBA Finals on Sunday night. And we will get to that aplenty today and tomorrow as well. It's just a reminder, the VSiN Weekend Morning Line, it's not just a Saturday show, boys and girls. It's a Saturday and Sunday, and I'll be with you tomorrow getting you ready for Game 7 of the NBA Finals. First Game 7 in the NBA Finals in 9 years since LeBron James and the Cavaliers came from 3-1 down to beat the Golden State Warriors there in game number 7. So that is going to be tomorrow night. Tonight, we get the start of the College World Series Finals, Coastal Carolina and LSU. Great guests for you to help us preview those games. Game 1 tonight, Game 2 tomorrow afternoon, maybe a game number 3. We'll talk to Jensen Lewis, Jimmy Ott, and also Matt Grissom, who has a column up right now on vsin.com. So I'm with you for the next 3 hours. You can always tweet me at @1TimMurray. We got a lot to get to. What unfolded late last night as we saw some pretty interesting baseball all across the Major League Baseball landscape. We'll get to that as we always do in the second segment of the show. But let's start the show like we always do. Get you ready for a busy Saturday ahead. And we call it setting the scene.
Let's dive into the biggest games of the day.
You know, last weekend, I wasn't on Saturday morning because Mitch and Paul were out in Omaha. Yeah, VSiN was out there in Omaha Thursday, Friday, and Saturday of last week, really setting the scene for the College World Series. And now we're down to two teams, Coastal Carolina and their 26-game winning streak, and the LSU Tigers, who entered the College World Series out in Omaha, right around a co-favorite with Arkansas. They were able to beat Arkansas not just once, but twice. They went unblemished through bracket 2. Hard to believe that this was a team on the brink of elimination, down 4 runs in a winner-go-home game against Arkansas Little Rock in the regionals, but they surpassed that. And now here they are, the LSU Tigers, 2 wins away from a national championship. Their head coach is Jay Johnson, and he knows a thing or two about winning a national title. Led this team to a title just 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think if you're at this point in the NCAA tournament, you've been battle tested, you know, so I think that's just the way that it is. I think for our team, I don't believe there's anything we have not seen. And what I mean by that is high level pitching, high level bullpen, high level defense, offenses with speed, power, hitting skills, know how to play the game, move the offense. So I feel like we're very prepared. And we really just leave it at that. I said this earlier in the week, you know, one of my attitudes about all of this is everything is training for something. And I feel like we're well-trained, well-prepared for, you know, in my opinion, probably the best team that we've played this year in Coastal.
Right now, Coastal Carolina and LSU sitting with a total of 8.5. Juice varies if you want to play the under -115 at DraftKings. If you want to play the over, a couple of spots at plus money to the over there. Tonight, LSU is around $1.50 favorite here at Circa and a handful of other shops as they go to Cade Anderson, their ace, who was tremendous in the series opener, the World Series opener, a week ago on Saturday as they beat, LSU beat, Arkansas 4-1. Over in bracket 1, it was felt to be kind of wide open, right? You only had two national seeds to make it to the College World Series. That was Oregon State and Coastal Carolina. Kevin Schnall's their head coach. He reminded us after they won their regional, we're not a Cinderella story. And we've learned that.
So scoring first is a big part of our offense. Absolutely. We're 37-2 when we score first. When we get to 7, we're 37-1. And we win the big inning war, we're 42-1. So as a collective unit, that's what we're trying to do every single day. Walter Walker Mitchell is a part of that unit, and he's done a great job of finding ways on base. He broke a single season record with hit by pitches. He can inside game, and he has a lot of really quality at bats, and that's why he's moved himself up in the lineup.
That's the head coach of Coastal Carolina, Kevin Schnall. As I alluded to, he had mentioned, yeah, we're not a Cinderella story, and they're not. They were the 13th seed. They had hosted a regional. They went on to take care of business in the super regionals. They enter tonight riding a 26-game winning streak. So it led to kind of a unusual situation at the press conference yesterday when Coastal Carolina, you had their head coach right there in Kevin Schnall answering questions, and they also had three players up there as well. Here's a bit of an awkward interaction from, I believe, a member of the LSU media talking to some of the Coastal Carolina players.
Your thoughts on LSU, what do you admire just as student athletes and fans of baseball, what do you like about the Tigers?
Not a whole lot.
I mean, we're not really worried about the Tigers. We're more of just a self-oriented team. Like, we're just focused on our team and our team only.
Bizarre question to ask the team who's going to play for the national championship. And look, I get it. When you look at or hear Coastal Carolina, you don't think power. They won the national championship 9 years ago. Yes, they went to Omaha and they won the national championship in their first and to this date only other appearance in the College World Series. So as their coach let us know, when they took care of business in their regional, knocking off an SEC team in Florida who was part of that regional, this isn't a fluke. This is not by accident. Now, if you look at the odds, LSU's the favorite, but they're not a overwhelming favorite. Let's just put it into context here. In the series, LSU is a minus 190 favorite. Coastal Carolina is plus 155. We've got game 7 of the NBA Finals tomorrow night. The money line for that game is Oklahoma City minus 285 here at Circa. So once again, to put this into context of what we're getting into in this three-game series or best-of-three series starting tonight in Omaha, it is anticipated that these teams are closer than Oklahoma City and the Indiana Pacers, a series that has gone 7 games, right? So this is not a fluke at all by Coastal Carolina, a team who has not lost a game since the middle of April. So Coastal Carolina very much deserves to be here. They're a damn good team, and hopefully we get an entertaining series. Should be a fun one tonight. Cade Anderson will be the starter for the LSU Bayou Bengals. Cameron Flukey will start for Coastal Carolina, who has a team ERA of 2.55, best in all of Division I baseball. As mentioned, we will get breakdowns in each hour of the show today on this series. Indiana, basketball on the brain. Coastal Carolina taking on LSU. We'll have Jensen Lewis join us at the bottom of the hour. We'll have Jimmy Ott down in Baton Rouge will join us in hour 2. And then our own Matt Grissom will join us in the final hour of the program. So plenty of analysis for you for tonight's College World Series, game 1 of that championship series. Speaking of a championship, we know there will be hardware given out in Omaha, but we don't know what day. It may be Sunday. It may be Monday. What we do know is that the Larry O'Brien Trophy will be handed out on Sunday night in Oklahoma City. Our job here on VSiN is to figure out who's going to be hoisting said Larry O'Brien Trophy. And we saw on Thursday night, it was in the building, and the Pacers said, not so fast, my friend. We're taking care of business here. Now, I thought this was a fascinating interaction that Tyrese Halliburton had with Scott Van Pelt on ESPN following the victory 108-91 on Thursday night. So if you missed it, this is Tyrese Halliburton. I thought being quite aware of his surroundings following the Game 6 victory by the Pacers over the Thunder on Thursday.
days, everybody's going to be talking about how good we looked, how well we played, how much pressure's on OKC. You know, that's going to be the narrative. And we got to do a good job of staying away from that stuff. You know, I think that can be poison. And if we do a good job of just kind of staying within ourselves in the locker room, I think that's very important, you know, for us in these next couple of days. We did some really good things tonight that we can, you know, build off of.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what I'm saying? It's game seven. There's no such thing as like a pretty game seven. You know, they're usually ugly bloodbaths. Figure it out. And that's what it's about. We got to go in and just figure it out. These guys are going to play hard. You know, they make shots at a higher clip on the, you know, at home. You know, their crowd is amazing. So, I'm excited, man. This is why we do what we do. This is the peak, the pinnacle of our sport. And, to do that with these guys in this locker room, I'm so excited about it.
Well, equally as important as that tree. That was Tyrese Halliburton on Thursday night on ESPN with Scott Van Pelt. And I thought very self-aware, right? Because the discussion really has been Oklahoma City. Are they going to let this slip through their fingers? What a performance we've seen from Indiana. And Tyrese Halliburton, pretty aware of what was going to be discussed and how he had to pull a little bit of a Saban line. That's going to be poison, rat poison. Push that to the side. Right now, starting to see some Indiana money come in, down to 7.5. Total on the move downward. We'll get to some of those trends as the show goes on. As many of you know by now, the trend for Game 7s has been under. If you look at the last 5 Game 7s in NBA Finals history, all very low-scoring affairs. Will that continue on Sunday night? We'll discuss that as the show continues. We'll be joined by JVT in the third hour of the show and plenty of analysis on that game throughout the program as well. We're up and running. It is the VSIN Weekend Morning Line. We like to set the scene first and then take a step back and say, what happened last night? About last night, a busy night in Major League Baseball. We might have a pitching phenom growing in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
You're tuned in to the VSIN Weekend Morning Line.
We keep it rolling here on a Saturday morning. College World Series finals begin tonight. LSU and Coastal Carolina. Jensen Lewis, who has done not only great work here on VSIN as our host of the morning show with Dave Ross, but also an analyst of college baseball for ESPN, and he's going to jump on the program in less than 15 minutes. We'll get you a preview of tonight's showdown in Omaha. Cade Anderson, the ace of LSU on the hill. I do have a best bet on that game. We will get to a little bit later. We'll discuss that with Jimmy Ott, who has been giving me some winners all throughout the College World Series. Of course, plenty of discussion on Game 7 of the NBA Finals. Right now, 7.5-point spread. There is a 7 out there in the market. So some love coming in on the Indiana Pacers and seeing some under money come in as well, which is understandable. But has the market gone too far? We'll discuss that certainly as the show goes on as well. But what we like to do here on the program, because it's early for us here in Vegas, and depending on where you are, you still might be getting that dust out of your eyes. So that's no problem. I don't judge anybody of what you did on a Friday night, because we all got those texts during college that said, hey, man, about last night. And that's what we like to call this segment, about last night. So what unfolded last night? And we'll do it from a Major League Baseball style. And we'll get to San Francisco, because we had a unique, I wouldn't call it a homecoming, but a unique situation unfold with Rafael Devers facing his former team so quickly after getting shockingly traded less than a week ago to the Bay. But I want to start with maybe a phenom growing in front of our eyes. How about what we saw in his second career Major League start? Jacob Mizorowski of the Milwaukee Brewers. So the Brewers are plus 135 dogs last night on the road at Minnesota. They go out and win the game 17-6. It was 17-2 going into the ninth inning. But I want to focus first on the pitching performance we saw from Jacob Mizorowski. So his first career start in the big leagues, he threw 5 no-hit innings against the St. Louis Cardinals. Last night, he did not give up a hit in the first 6 innings before finally giving up a homer in the seventh. And how about this stat courtesy of ESPN? Jacob Mizorowski became the first pitcher to start his big league career with 11 consecutive hitless innings as a starter since 1900. He took a perfect game into the seventh inning of his second career start Friday night, meaning last night. Six strikeouts last night. So far for Jacob Mizorowski, 11 innings pitched, one hit, two runs. It was a homer. He's walked five. He struck out 11. So 11 strikeouts through his first 11 innings. And then this stat from OptiStats, Jacob Mizorowski of the Brewers is the only MLB pitcher in the modern era to have more wins, two, than hits allowed, one, over his first two career starts. The dude is a wiry, gangly pitcher who chucks it 102 regularly. There is a video out there of one of his strikeouts where he literally made a Minnesota Twin fall to the ground on a slider inside. I mean, it's something that you see in like high school when you see like a Division I kid facing, you know, someone who's going to study engineering at Purdue or something like that. Like, you don't see this ever. And this kid looks like he's going to be the next phenom on the hill. Now, hopefully stays healthy, all of that. But man, the Milwaukee Brewers. Remember, Aaron Civale was none too pleased about losing his starting role in the rotation there in Milwaukee. Got sent to the bullpen. He said, I want out. They traded him to the White Sox. So be careful what you wish for. But it looks like they made the right move. How about also Christian Yelich last night? Also in this game, Christian Yelich had 8 RBI in the win for the Brewers. Remember, they were a dog last night, a plus 135. And this also from OptiStats. Since RBI became an official stat in 1920, Christian Yelich is the only MLB player to drive in 8-plus runs in a game without hitting a homer. So quite the night there for the Milwaukee Brewers as they win 17-6 as a slight dog, plus 135. All right, let's get to the game that so many people were curious about. The Giants and the Red Sox last night. It wasn't the return of Rafael Devers after he got traded, shockingly, last Sunday, but it was him facing his former team. And I don't know if it was a troll job, but Rafael Devers, prior to the start of the game, was out there taking grounders at, you guessed it, first base. But unfortunately for Rafael Devers and the San Francisco Giants, they did not get the victory. They ultimately fell 7-5 against the Boston Red Sox. The Red Sox scored a run in the sixth, a run in the seventh to break a 5-all tie. Rafael Devers hit one deep to left field. The wind kept that one in at Oracle Park, and the Red Sox have now won 8 of 9. The Red Sox getting hot. This is a team that many people believe could be a sneaky NL or AL East contender. Got off to a very slow start. And now here they are, 40-37. They've won 8 of their last 9 games. They get the victory last night, and Rafael Devers ultimately goes just 5 of 7 goes 0 for 5 in the game there for the San Francisco Giants. Alex Cora is the manager of the Boston Red Sox, and he discussed the let's just say the awkwardness of facing Rafael Devers less than a week after he gets traded from Boston to San Francisco.
Not surreal, just weird, you know, but like I said, you know, we as an organization, we made a decision. He's with the Giants, and like he said a few days ago, you know, he has a job to do. We got a job to do, and you know, we're going to face each other 3 times, you know. If we face each other later on, that's going to be surreal. Yeah.
Red Sox were around a plus 115 dog last night as they get the win 7-5. And as mentioned, seem to be rolling right now. The Red Sox not skipping a beat since trading Rafael Devers. I still was with some friends last Sunday, and when that came across and we had Sunday Night Baseball on, we were like, that's not real. And it was. Rafael Devers in the early parts of a massive contract extension in Boston, now a member of the San Francisco Giants, went 0 for 5 last night out there at Oracle Park as the Red Sox get the win once again by a final score of 7-5. The biggest upset of the day, the biggest dog to come home, let's stay in the AL East. This was a double winner for the Boston Red Sox because the New York Yankees were as high as a minus
340 favorite. That was the price here at Circa last night as they had Max Fried on the hill against the Boston Red Sox and ultimately, or excuse me, against the Baltimore Orioles. And ultimately, the Orioles, who they have been an enormous disappointment this year, have the Baltimore Orioles. But the Orioles get it done. And the biggest dog of the night, Baltimore, comes home. They win 5-3. Ramon Urias hits a solo shot in the eighth inning to break a 3-3 tie. So the Orioles, the biggest dog of the night, they ultimately come home beating the Yankees 5-3. So real quickly, just taking a look at where we sit from the AL East standpoint in the standings. Yankees still in first place, but it's getting pretty crowded up there. You've got Tampa just a game and a half back, Toronto 3 games back, and then the red hot Red Sox at 40-37, 4 games back. So an upset last night, and one that was notable for the rest of the division. As you look at the division odds, we put them up here. We'll get some thoughts. Cody Decker going to join the show, and we'll ask Jensen Lewis about this as well. The AL East is getting pretty interesting. Yankees still the favorites, odds on at -225, but Rays at 5-1, Blue Jays 7-1, Red Sox 10-1. We'll see if the Red Sox hot stretches, if it's just a stretch or if it will continue that way. This was earlier in the day, but worth noting, how about what we're seeing from Mariners catcher Cal Raleigh? Love day games at Wrigley on Friday. I've been to a couple. It's one of the best things going in Major League Baseball. But Cal Raleigh now has more homers than any catcher before the All-Star break in MLB history. And as pointed out by Talkin' Baseball, 29 homers, and it's only June 20th. Yes, Cal Raleigh and the Seattle Mariners went to Wrigley Field yesterday and got a 9-4 victory, thanks in large part to Cal Raleigh hitting a pair of home runs in that victory yesterday afternoon at Wrigley Field. And the Seattle Mariners went off as around a +124 dog. So a lot of dogs barking, but unfortunately, my Nationals, who stink, the dog was not barking out there, even though the ace, Mackenzie Gore, was on the hill. And the Dodgers ultimately prevailed over Washington 6-5 as Clayton Kershaw and company get the win as -175 favorites. All right, we're going to talk some college baseball, maybe a little Major League Baseball as well with Jensen Lewis, our own Jensen Lewis, coming up in less than 5 minutes. But hey, folks, if you want to make smarter football bets this season, start with VSiN Pro. For a limited time, you can grab our football special at the early bird rate of just $175, giving you full access from now through the Super Bowl. That includes our NFL betting guide, the ultimate playbook with team breakdowns, power ratings, and season-long bets. You'll also get a daily best bets email from our expert hosts and guests, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, and live and ready and on-demand shows on the VSiN Watch app. Don't miss out on this early bird special. Head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Price, $175. VSIN.com/subscribe. Let's talk some more baseball. We'll do that with Jensen Lewis. He'll join us next. We've got College World Series and plenty of MLB to hit on with him. We'll do that right here on VSiN.
Tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
We keep it rolling here. I'm fired up, folks. It's a Saturday morning. We've got baseball all over the place tonight, and I'm excited to talk to our next guest. And we try not to go too far down memory lane. We never technically crossed paths, but there were, and once again, I'm not pretending like I was out there doing anything. I was sitting up in a booth calling games, but we once upon a time were Carolina League buddies, and that's Jensen Lewis, who joins us right now, and of course, co-host of the VSiN by the Books program every weekday morning here on the network. You know, just thinking about those trips. I was talking to someone a little bit the other day about, you know, driving all throughout the lovely state of Virginia and stopping in, you know, Salem, Virginia. I'm sure you remember those fondly. Forget the days in the big leagues, Jensen. It was all about the Carolina League travel for you, I'm sure.
You know, just those memorable trips from Kinston to Myrtle Beach, you know, when we actually looked at civilization, we're like, hey, this is a really good trip. And then, you know, you'd come back and be like, oh my God, we got to go there again. It is the uniqueness, though, of the Carolina League, as you know, where you have 8 teams. And that was really kind of the filtering out process for the top prospects, because there were no secrets, as you well know, probably by the end of May. Everyone knew what everyone had. And it was about executing. It was about getting better. And some some good memories there in Kinston. I'm thrilled I only had to be there for half a season and got to go to Double A. But you're right, man. Right around this time of the year, oh, man, the triple digits and the humidity, no thanks. Don't miss that whatsoever.
What you were always told about Kinston, North Carolina, great field. I was like, okay, that's not a good thing. That's not promising. But, yes, Myrtle Beach, great segue because you're a pro. Let's go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, which is just a little bit a ways away from Coastal Carolina and their home in Conway. We got the series here. And, Kevin Schnall has done an amazing job this year, winning streak of 26 games. What stands out to you, Jensen, the most about Coastal? Because I played this clip earlier in the show. A reporter asked them what they admire about LSU, and the players kind of looked around and are like, nothing. Like, we're here to win a championship. What are we doing here? And, you know, people hear the name Coastal Carolina and think, all right, this is some Cinderella story. This is, you know, Fairleigh Dickinson beating Purdue. That's not the case, right? This is one of the elite programs in college baseball.
It is. And ironically, you bring that up, the press conference, Jacob Morrison, who was the one who answered that, will be the starting pitcher for tomorrow's either 1-0 game to try and get Coastal to another national title or to try and keep their season alive and force a winner take all on Monday night. So as it sets up today here, Tim, and for people that haven't checked the weather yet, going to be triple digits in and of itself in Omaha. And we're talking winds upwards of 40 miles an hour at some junctures here. So, I looked at the total yesterday and I was going to check it again this morning once I saw the weather. And buddy, I don't know if I want anything to do with it at all. This could be a complete stay away just from a betting perspective and just be a fan and really see, as far as Coastal goes, 26 straight wins. They've done it in a myriad of different ways. They have elite starting pitching. They have the ability to manufacture runs if they need to. They're not afraid to bunt. Not afraid to you really cause some chaos in the base paths. And then they also have a little bit of slug in their lineup. So very well-rounded group. Not anywhere near the power, though, that you would see from a Jared Jones in the middle of an LSU lineup and kind of how Jay Johnson's crew wants to do things. Oh, by the way, go up against Kate Anderson, who has just been lights out down the stretch here for LSU. So I think it's more incumbent, Tim, that Coastal gets the win today. I think they, LSU being, they are well more equipped to come back from an 0-1 deficit with the depth of pitching that they have versus Coastal having to force a winner take all if they lose tonight's contest.
Well, I guess that win might be coming in because the market is now moving towards the under. Eights are showing up, so that's something to keep an eye on there. So if you are interested in the under, DraftKings, head there now because they're still 8.5 minus 15 to the under. Everywhere else in the market is now moving to 8 here at Circa, 8 juiced over. You know, when you look at this best of three series and you mentioned Kate Anderson, I'm curious to get your thoughts, Jensen, as a former pitcher. This guy, after his lights out performance against Arkansas, started to get, hey, this guy could be a first round pick. Maybe he's in the mid 20s, somewhere in that range when we get to the draft in a month or so. What impresses you about tonight's starting pitcher for LSU, Kate Anderson?
I think it's his ability to turn a lineup over 2, 3, potentially 4 times. And it's the vastness of the arsenal. He has so many different weapons that he can go to and certainly the poise of him. Obviously you play at LSU, you're going to pitch in a lot of big Friday night contests. You're going to pitch in a lot of tough scenarios there. So he feels extremely polished. He feels like a guy you can plug and play in pretty much any organization. And you don't feel that it's going to be too long of a time in the minor leagues to find his way up to a big league rotation. So again, for people who have not seen him, a guy that works efficiently, he's going to pound the strike zone, a lot of different ways to get you out in 2 strike counts. And so Coastal certainly has their work cut out for him, but if there's a lineup that could create some problems, now knowing kind of where the conditions are and how they offensively can be a chameleon of sorts, this will be a challenge for Kate Anderson tonight.
Jensen Lewis joining us here, courtesy of our Progressive Guest Line. Of course, catch him and Dave Ross every weekday morning, with VSiN by the book, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern time. All right, you said you're probably just going to sit this one out. Push gambling to the side, and I know that's sacrilegious here on VSiN, but push gambling to the side. What's your gut tell you in this best of three series? Is it going to be LSU winning another national title for the second time in 3 years?
I think I would, and just, you know, my Vanderbilt allegiance here to the SEC, I would lean LSU at this point. And I just feel that the way that they've gotten here, and knowing that when they entered the tournament, they were as fully loaded as any club out there, maybe besides Arkansas, and the irony of those two teams matching up here in the first game, and then playing what is still a head scratcher of a finish in that elimination scenario for Arkansas. I still will never understand how Behiva Lloyd doesn't start the turn, which would have been a game ending double play. All right. So, you know, bottom line, here's the X factor for me. I just think that Jay Johnson knows he's got a boatload of weapons that he can use on his pitching staff and be able to limit scoring opportunities for Coastal. LSU can slug even if the wind's blowing in. They can find their ways to the gaps because the chuck is very reminiscent, Tim, to Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City. You know, there's a lot of space to work with there. If there's a team that can use their speed really well, it would be LSU. And so I do think it may not be 2-Q for Coastal. I would love nothing more than to see the winner take all on Monday night because of just the drama that will ensue there. But I do think this is LSU's to lose.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, I said it to start the show. Hey, I already lost my series bet on the Pacers Thunder, so I was thrilled to see Game 6 unfold the way that it did. So we get a Game 7 tonight, and hopefully we get that opportunity there on Monday night. Jensen, let's turn a little bit to the MLB here in the final 3 minutes that we have with you. I was just talking about the AL East, and things are getting interesting, right? Yankees have now lost 7 of 8. Red Sox have won 8 of 9. The Orioles, I mean, they're pretty much out of it, but they're actually playing better baseball right now. The AL East, as crazy as it sounds, it feels like it's kind of wide open right now.
Remarkable, too, that the Rays have kind of done this without Shane McClanahan for most of the season. They've had to figure out some lineup continuity, and Junior Caminero has finally started to swing the bat the way that we saw him end the end of last year's regular season and through winter ball this year. So, let's get right to him. First game on the docket here today. I do like Ryan Pepiot. Moneyline, I got, I think, around $1.32. I think that's all the way up to $1.42 now on Tampa Bay Moneyline at home. Again, good series here. Two of the top teams in the American League, the Tigers and the Rays. I think it'll be Brant Herter now getting the start for Detroit there, and more of a bullpen game, if you will. But Pepiot at home and a Rays offense that has found a way, and again, a boatload of runs yesterday. Do think they are able to secure a series win here this afternoon.
Afternoon game out in San Francisco, the Bay. Last night, really fun matchup. We saw the Red Sox pull it out. Rafael Devers, maybe a little trolling, taking some ground balls at first base pregame, which is kind of fun to see there. So we've got an afternoon game there at Oracle. San Francisco, a slight favorite against the red-hot Red Sox. Anything you like in this one?
Yeah, I did go with the Giants. Landon Roop will get the start for them against Brian Bello. I know that's ticked down a bit. I got it at $1.37. I know it's down to $1.22 right now, but still feel that the Giants, unable to get it across the line last night, find a way to do it tonight, and or this afternoon, I should say. One another, you talk about how the AL East has tightened. Boy, I don't think we expected the National League West to be as tight as it was maybe just a week or so ago. And, you know, the Giants trying to figure some things out here as well. But back into their bullpen gives you a lot of opportunities day in and day out to win. Now with the addition of Devers in there with Willie Adames, Matt Chapman, Elliot Ramos, I do feel the Giants find a launching point here and start to put up some series wins back to back.
Follow him at JLou50. Hear him every weekday morning with Dave Ross starting at 7 a.m. Eastern. Jensen and enjoy the games today. Always appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Tim. Appreciate it.
There he is. Jensen Lewis joining us courtesy of our Progressive guest line. Good stuff there, both College World Series and MLB. Hey, folks, if you're betting on sports, why not try The Races? First Bet lets you wager on hundreds of horse races every day from top tracks across the U.S. and around the world. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use this promo code VSIN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days up to $200. Head on over to firstbet.com today. From baseball to hoops, we got a Game 7 tomorrow night. Rick Camilla, my good friend, will help us preview it next.
You're tuned in to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line.
We keep it rolling here on a Saturday morning. I'm Tim Murray, live from the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Hour number two, we'll be joined by Jimmy Ott as we continue to get you ready for the College World Series Finals, which starts tonight. Also, my good friend Cody Decker will join us in the second hour as well, as we'll talk a little baseball. How about Aaron Moore chiming in, listening as he's driving down the Jersey Turnpike? He said, "I'm driving like Tony Soprano listening to you." He said, "If you like LSU to win the series, you may want to look to parlay them with Oklahoma City on Sunday night. You get that at a plus price. Right now, LSU to win the series is minus $1.90. Well, will Oklahoma City win on Sunday night? Let's ask our next guest, who joins us courtesy of our progressive guest line. Rick Kamala, good friend of the show, joins us right now. And Rick, you know, we were talking briefly off air, man. This has been wildly unpredictable. You got to tip your cap to the Pacers. I keep calling them the cockroaches because they just do not die. We're going to dive into this. We're going to look at some props, but let's just start where we are right now. It's a 7.5-point spread heading into Sunday night. Do the Pacers do the unthinkable? Are they hoisting up Larry O'Brien's trophy on Sunday night in OKC?
I don't think so, Tim. I don't. I've felt like this is OKC's year all year. I know Indiana, they've been phenomenal. I mean, they've knocked off all these teams. They're here in a game seven. You had all the questions about Halliburton, the MRI, the calf. You know, were the Pacers playing possum with OKC and everybody else? Sure seems that way. I mean, they're calling it a multi-week injury, and then you watch Halley in game six. There's no way that's a multi-week injury. I mean, there's no way. So to me, that's lies. It's espionage, but really, really smart, and I appreciate it. Anyway, they're here, man, but OKC's at home. Their role players are all going to surge now because they're going to be back at home. The three-ball game once again escaped OKC in game six. I believe that's going to return in game seven. I think Caruso's going to have a game, Tim. I mean, I this may be the Caruso game, like the Ben Mathurin game earlier in the season. I think SGA is going to be an absolute tiger, a killer, hearkening Jordan and Kobe references. And I like OKC. I Tim, based on the pump fakes, the unpredictability you talked about, I don't have a ton of confidence in that. But that take is rooted in history, man. The home team is 15-4 all time in game seven, at home in game seven of the finals. 15-4, man. And we know how phenomenal this OKC team is. 68 wins. And here they are, you know, one win from a championship. So I'll take OKC and I'll lay the points.
Rick Kamala joining us here, courtesy of our progressive guest line. Of course, game seven tomorrow night in Oklahoma City. This is a Thunder team, Rick, that has really, I would say for the most part, now they lost game one in both the Denver series and this series, but for the most part, they have dismantled teams on their home court. They have played so well, especially coming off of losses. They are 5-1 ATS in the first half coming off of losses. Granted, they did not cover game four. They are undefeated this postseason coming off losses. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how that all plays out. I am curious your thoughts here because I think the MVP, usually it's pretty clear cut. And I think if it ultimately is OKC, there's a reason that SGA is minus 205 to win NBA Finals MVP. But let's play the scenario that the Pacers win on Sunday night. How do you think this Finals MVP vote ultimately comes down? Because it feels like it's Siakam and Halliburton and Siakam with the slight edge. But how do you think this ultimately plays out for NBA Finals MVP?
So I think SGA is going to win it because I think he's going to have 30 plus in game seven. And I think they're going to win the game. Now, if that does not happen, and obviously it depends on, you know, how Halley and how Siakam perform in game seven. I thought it was an egregious amount of bullcrap that Pascal Siakam beat Halliburton for Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Bullcrap. It's bad voting. It's overthinking it. Yes, I know Siakam was fantastic in that series. He wasn't more important or better or more valuable to his team than Halliburton. Halliburton is the engine of the car, okay? Like, give me a break, dude. He's the hub of the whole thing. So they're probably going to overthink it, Tim. I think it's an absolute joke that only 9 human beings vote on, these big, you know, Eastern Conference Finals, MVP, Finals, MVP. 9 people. What? There's 250 media people in the effing building, okay? And you're only going to not, like, how about 50 people vote on this? They got to open that up. To me, it's too exclusive, and I don't know. I just, a lot of these voters, they're trying to dare to be different and be cute and be cheeky. No, don't be cheeky. Go with the guy that should win the damn award.
By the way, I appreciate the constraint there. I could sense it bubbling there, but you held back, Rick. Much appreciated. You know, our radio terrestrial affiliates are appreciative of the restraint from you, Rick. So let's
the kids are out there.
Yeah, man. This is a family-friendly show. I mean, that's what I, you know, look, I got a young son, and of course, every Saturday morning, he's listening to the VSiN Weekend Morning Line. That's his his weekend routine. Rick Campbell joining us here, getting us ready for Game 7. So let's get into some props. You've hinted at it a little bit, so let's jump into it. You are, and you know, the old adage goes, role players play much better at home. We've seen that in Indiana with a handful of their role players playing exceptionally well. Obi Toppin having 20 points in game 6. When you think back to the Benedict Mathurin performance as well. So who do you think steps up here on Sunday night when you're looking at some of the props that are out there?
So I like the Caruso point over. I like the SGA point over. I know it's high at 33, 34, whatever it is. It's been there the whole series. But, you know, he's coming off of a terrible game. His team got destroyed. Like, I mean, this is like this has 35 written all over it. For SGA. Is Scott Foster officiating?
I believe so.
Although we may get a double digit free throw game from SGA then, and a lot of complaining from Indiana. But I like SGA's over. I got a real strong Caruso vibe in this game. I don't really trust Aaron Wiggins or Cason Wallace. Like, they have these eruption games, but it's too infrequent. And I'll go J-Dub. I'll go over on J-Dub. You have the 40. And Tim, one of my biggest angles, like, and it hit again. Like, I fade a guy coming off of an act of God game. So, like, Jalen Williams coming off the 40, that's an act of God game. Hell yeah, I'm going under the next time. And now he's coming out of that. He's back at home, and I think he's going to be shot out of a cannon. So I'll go SGA over, J-Dub over, and Caruso over.
All right, so we're going to get into this top of the hour. We're going to go through the last 5 NBA Finals Game 7s that we've seen. And they get ugly, right? They get bogged down. Let's think back to the last one we saw 9 years ago, Cavaliers and Warriors, Rick. And the thing just came to a screeching halt in that fourth quarter. Nobody could make a shot. And then LeBron hits a 3, I think, to put him up 2. And then Kyrie hits the big 3 to put him up 3, I believe it was, and ultimately win 93-89. So it's an interesting thing from a gambling standpoint, right, where you know that historically it trends under, but the books, unfortunately for us, are not dummies, and they've adjusted this from 222.5, which was the closing number of game 6, to 214.5 is where we're at right now. So what's your feel on how this plays out from a total standpoint? Do you think this plays into the hands of what we've seen historically in game 7s, Rick, which is ugly, slow basketball?
I got to go with your flow here, man. I was in the building, Tim, for Game 7 back in 2010. I met Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers that Woo-hoo! Night.
Did he have clothes on?
He did have clothes on. That's good. Yes, thank God. It was in the arena, and it was in between the third and fourth quarters. And he literally sprinted up the lower bowl. Probably had to take a pee or whatever, and then like. Sprinted and then sprinted right past. And I was standing next to a guy that knew him, and he's like, Flea, you got to meet this guy. So we stopped and shook my hand and then went and did his thing. So it wasn't long, but I met Flea that night. Anyway, Tim, let me tell you something, dude. Look back at the box score of game 7 of 2010. All right. Kobe couldn't make a shot. Pau Gasol couldn't make a shot. The most important stat of the game was rebounding. Okay. Grab the boards, get possessions, because nobody can make a shot. Remember, that was the Meta World Peace game. Kobe passed me the ball. Remember that? And so look at the final score of that game. Yeah, I just recall that being an absolute bloodbath where every single point was super precious. This one may have a little bit of more of an offensive tone to it because of Indiana, all their scores. OKC, they're going to be making threes, but you know, I don't know, Tim. I'm not a big over-under guy, but historically, Game 7s are really, really ugly games. So the under's probably the play here.
Rick, you're the play, always. Appreciate it, sir, and enjoy Game 7, man.
Tim, good luck, man. I'll talk to you soon.
There he is, Rick Camilla joining us. Check out all his work over at Rick Camilla Sports and also Sports Ethos. And well done, Rick. Yeah, I could feel it coming. I know the crew back there was like, uh-oh, we got to hit the dump button. Good restraint by our guy, Rick. Just passionate. A passionate take there on MVP voting. And also got the wheels turning a little bit on a best bet that I think I might have to throw together here. All right, let's keep it rolling. It is the VSiN Weekend Morning Line right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.